Welcome to the Foolish Racing Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:44 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 29th. We've had a very enjoyable, although perhaps a little bit excessive, consumption of everything that might be attached to an Epicurean way of living over the last few days, but it's been a lot of fun. And certainly markets have been active over the last couple of days. This is a very quiet time for conventional assets, but it does mean that just because volume is lower doesn't mean that people can't move markets around a lot, and we've had some big moves. The biggest has been in Bitcoin, and it was up a couple of $1,000s yesterday and again the day before. There was a big move again on the weekend. We do tend to get these big moves on the weekends, and not least because it's a 24-hour traded market, but it tends to have these moves outside of normal market hours, which is not really conventional, but it's certainly a feature of this market. Monitoring Bitcoin on a log scale was the most productive way of monitoring the trend back in 2016 and 17. It was a very orderly percentage move driven market. And when we look at the trend in 2016 and 17, it was a staircase step sequence uptrend where we had a sequence of ranges, one above another, and they were all relatively similar sized in terms of the magnitude of the percentage pullback that occurred during the trend, despite the fact that the price moved from approximately $700, or I think perhaps maybe more accurately around $400 in early 2016, up to a peak of 20,000, or almost 20,000, the pullbacks were almost all similar sized in percentage terms, even though as the price went up, they became progressively larger in dollar terms. Then, when we think about what's going on right now, well, we're definitely in a powerful breakout, and it has been up on consecutive weeks. There have been only a couple of times when it has paused, but then not on a closing basis. What's also, I think, particularly interesting is the magnitude or the length of time that it spent ranging between 2013 and 17, and this more than 3-year range has been repeated. So we had the peak in December of 2017, and now we've had the breakout in December of 2020. So this is really very similar, and we also have the cyclicality in terms of the halvening events. So there is a clear rationale. Now, the big question, of course, that everybody's asking is just how high can Bitcoin go? Well, when we look at how much it has moved already, to go from a dollar to $1,000 is an incredible move. The move from approximately the lows in 2015, which were around 165, up to 20,000 is a very considerable move, but it isn't as large as the original move. It's reasonable to anticipate that we're not going to have the same size moves in terms of percentages the longer the trend persists for, just by virtue of the fact of weight of money. That in order to get an asset of limited supply up from $100 to $1,000 does not require the same amount of money that it takes to move a price from $20,000 to $20 million. So obviously there is a differential here, but one thing that we can think about is that it is a powerful breakout, and this is, and ranges or explosions waiting to happen. We have no evidence that the trend is over, and if the consistency of the breakouts that we've seen in the past is going to be repeated, then we should anticipate that breakouts will be measured in terms of percentage declines rather than dollar terms, and we haven't had a sizable pullback yet in order to confirm that is likely to be the case. Then we can think about the catch-up potential for other assets like Ethereum. It has also been explosive on the upside. It's almost doubled since well, since the test of the upper side of the base formation in September, it has doubled, but it's still breaking out and playing catch up. I continue to think that this is very similar to what we see in the precious metal markets. Gold prices continue to pause. They've been holding under the $1,900 area, really quite inert over this holiday period. But it's going to have to sustain a move above the $1,900 area, and I think perhaps more accurately above $1,950, in order to break the downtrend since the peak in August and to confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. What we are, however, seeing is that silver has been a relative strength performer, and it has held the move above the $25 level, so far at least. It was in mildly negative territory today, but this does look like a good example of what we've seen in the past, that after an initial period when gold tends to outperform, then high beta plays on gold tend to move into outperformance for the remainder of the bull market. So we can anticipate that silver should outperform gold for the foreseeable future. Now, when we think about gold shares, well, they had been pulling back coming into the holiday, and they are still in the region of the trend mean, not quite able to hold the advance yesterday, but still holding the region of the trend mean. A lot of questions are being asked about what exactly we can anticipate from the dollar. It rebounded off its lows yesterday, gave up the advance in here today. The much bigger picture, or I think it behooves us to look at not simply what's happened this year, where we've had a downtrend since the initial spike around the flight to safety during the panic in February and March. It's now back in the region of the lows from 2018, and I think some investors at least will be looking for a rebound from this area. And it has been in this range now for about 6 years already. But when we look at this on a longer term basis, then we get more information, because the dollar tends to move in a highly cyclical manner, and it tends to have trends that last about 7 years. So it all depends on whether one thinks that the peak in this trend up from the lows in 2008 was in 2016, or was it perhaps in 2020? Well, if the peak was in 2016-17, then we can anticipate that the next significant low for the dollar index is going to be sometime in approximately 2023 or 2024. And if history is any guide, then it will be below the lows put in 2008. So there is significant scope for the dollar to trend downwards from here. Therefore, when we think about precious metals, is there the potential that we could have a rebound in the dollar in the short term? Absolutely. Could that represent an additional buying opportunity for gold at a lower price? Potentially. But is it also likely to represent a shorting opportunity for the dollar, and therefore an additional buying opportunity for anything that is linked to a weaker dollar, almost definitely? When we then think about other commodities, well, we've had a significant rebound in natural gas prices. I think this is also occurring from the region of the trend mean. We've had a significant volatility in natural gas over the course of the last few months. This is an ideal area where we could anticipate some support coming back if this is a recovery scenario overall. When we think about the oil price, it has been quite firm over the last few months, and it continues to hold the $50 area, which is the upper side of the range that persisted mostly between June and the period up to the peak in August. If we're still looking at global reflation in 2021, and I see no reason to question that as a potential outcome, then we can anticipate that there could be additional upward pressure on oil prices. When we think about the copper price, it's been holding here around the 350 area on COMEX, But the much bigger picture is that it has broken out of this base that's been forming now for 7 years. And as long as it is holding that move above the trend mean, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. As we look at what markets have been doing over the course of this last couple of days, it might give us an indication of what we can anticipate for next year. So the FTSE 100 rebounded by over 1% in here today, and even then it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance. The UK is, or the FTSE 100 is full of cyclical shares. And when we think about the healthcare sector, the banking sector, and the resources sector, they represent significant weightings, and they're all likely to benefit from global reflation. So the UK stock market tends to be highly cyclical in nature. Then when we think about the FTSE 250, it is outperforming in no uncertain terms. So then we can also think about the potential that Brexit will favour the domestic economy as well. So there are two significant trends that are likely to play a part in the outlook for the UK stock market next year. And they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. When we think about, well, what is it that the government is likely to do? Well, they're unlikely to support any further advance in the dollar, in the pound, but they're unlikely to do much to arrest its advance either. When we think about the competitive forces that are competing for the weakest currency in the world, well, the UK has already benefited from a weak currency over the last 4 years. So then with the agreement on Brexit, there isn't necessarily a strong argument for why the pound should be very much weaker than it has already been. There is, of course, the potential that the UK will start to attract foreign direct investment because of the value proposition. And the UK is trading at a significant discount to other markets. So if we're looking at global reflation and the potential for value to continue to move into a sustained position of outperformance, then the UK is an obvious area that could benefit. One thing that I also thought was interesting in here today is that we've seen a significant rebound in some of the smaller Eastern European markets. And when, for example, we look at the Vilnius market, it is pushing on to new all-time highs. When we think about the Czech market, sorry, that's the wrong ticker, then it has also pushed on to a new recovery high. Switzerland, right in the middle of Europe, has, or Western Europe, has pushed on to a new recovery high as well. And this is another example of a market that can appreciate despite the fact that the currency is strengthening. So this is an additional phenomenon that we're seeing right across Europe, the UK, Asia, emerging markets, commodity producers. They're all tending to rally now as their currencies are appreciating. So that's a clear indication that they are attracting speculative flows. They're also attracting longer-term investment flows, because investors like to have the currency on their side, and particularly when they're investing beyond their own borders. Then when we think about what's happening on Wall Street, well, the stock market tends now to do better when the dollar is going down. This is the opposite of the condition that we had for most of the last few years. Wall Street was a magnet for international flows because the currency was strong and the growth opportunities were also strong. But we're seeing less enthusiasm now for Wall Street as against other markets. There's the potential that Wall Street will not be the best performing major market over the next few years. When we think about how are those emerging markets doing, well, the Indian market has reversed the decline right ahead of Christmas and has continued to rebound and posted a new high. The banking index has also rebounded, so that's also positive, and it is coming back up towards the peaks put in at the beginning of 2020. What I thought was also interesting today was Alibaba rebounded, and it was well off the lows put in right at the end of the, or excuse me, before Christmas. But Alibaba has got a hill to climb in terms of its relationship with the Chinese government, and there has been a clear determination to clip their wings. So then the question is, how is it possibly going to continue to grow when the regulator is now breathing down its neck? That obviously is a factor in the return to performance of Baidu. And Baidu has now clearly broken out of a one-year base formation, and it was in additional positive territory today. JD.com may also be a beneficiary of the trouble that Alibaba is finding itself in. This is really rather similar to the kind of trouble, for example, that Facebook find itself in with regard to the potential for, I guess, some form of sanctioning of their activities. But the outlook then for competitors that are somewhat smaller, like Snap, has resulted in clear turns to outperformance. I had an email today from a subscriber in India who was asking to download the video because they don't have clear internet access. One thing that I thought was interesting about that is Netflix has taken a massive bet on India, and it's where they anticipate the majority of their growth coming from. Well, if you're running a streaming service that is wholly dependent on internet access, then it's very helpful that people have reliable internet access. And if people in Mumbai are getting by on very patchy networks, then that is something that will weigh on the ability of companies like Netflix to grow, or indeed for Amazon or Walmart, or indeed any of the banks looking to promote their e-banking or online banking apps. So what happens in terms of India's growth and India's internet connectivity is likely to have wider connotations. Then I had another question asking about a hydrogen ETF, and there isn't one. Nobody's listed one yet. And then the danger of thinking about renewables is that when one thinks about what the potential is, it's very attractive. But Tesla is the company that has, I think, garnered the vast majority of investor attention. It's a lightning rod for speculative activity. And the share is up in an incredibly impressive manner this year. So when we're thinking about a stock that's up 700% in a year, well, it's unlikely to do the same thing next year. To go from 700 to 3,500, well, that would make it nearly twice as large as Apple at the current price level. And obviously, that's rather unlikely. So then, when we think about, well, where is the money going to be made next year? Well, it's unlikely to be in Tesla, or at least the best performing stock in the S&P 500 is unlikely to be Tesla next year. When we think about the renewable ETFs, well, then the best performing renewable energy ETFs have all got Tesla as one of their largest holdings, because they couldn't possibly have been the best performing renewable energy ETF without it. So then that's unlikely to provide the kind of growth opportunity that, or the growth mix that would really give access to a bull market in hydrogen, because there's still such a small number of companies that offer access, that really the only way to gain access is through individual equity exposure. When we think, though, about Tesla and the fact that it is a magnet for speculation, well, the big question has to be about what happens with bond yields. And yields were a little bit weaker in here today, but it's still holding below the 1% level. And as long as that remains the case, well then, the potential is that with really no discount rate, there's likely to continue to be plenty of appetite for speculative interest in high growth as an investment theme. This, of course, has been the abiding theme of the last decade. It's also one of the primary reasons why private equity has been so successful, because private equity is simply an upstream way of investing in high growth. And obviously, upstream activities, whether that is in mining or in energy or in trying to gain access to speculative flows, it's all dependent on speculative activity and interest rates. So as long as interest rates remain low, well then the flows into the high growth sector are likely to remain in place and could very well accelerate. On the other hand, if we do get the specter of inflation starting to come back next year, then the potential is that we will have a more clear rotation into more cyclical sectors. And the recent strength of financials is certainly a case in point. Morgan Stanley, for example, has broken up to new recovery highs. It's been ranging in a volatile manner for most of the last 20 years, but it is coming back up towards the peaks from 2007. There's some speculation that Goldman Sachs may even go private at some point over the next couple of years. That does also appear to be something that is being considered by a number of other financials, but Goldman is now pushing on to new highs as well. So they are benefiting from a steepening yield curve and the potential that we may have higher interest rates at some point in the future, which would obviously boost their business models. And of course, they are doing very well from the speculative environment at present, and their trading businesses are also doing well. So while we do have some areas of the market that are extremely overvalued, there are plenty of other areas in the market that represent value, and the potential is that value will turn to outperformance as we move towards greater reflation and the return of inflationary pressures. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.